Hello, I'm Paul Smart, and this is the November issue of The Work Show. We were originally going to do this episode on first responders. Unfortunately, not everybody we attempted to speak to would speak to us. As a result, we reshaped this program into something in honor of Veterans Day, which took place earlier this week. Amongst those we talked to was a World War II veteran, two Vietnam War veterans, and then a man who has been working full-time for most of our local rescue squad.
Hey, Jack, that's the G.I. Jive. Rudely toot, jump in your suit, make a salute. Arrivoot, after you wash and dress, more or less, you go get your breakfast from a beautiful little cafe they call the Mess. Hey, Jack, when you convalesce, out of your seat, into the street, make with your feet, or read, if you're a PVT, your duty is to salute the L-I-E-U-T. But if you brush the L-I-E-U-T, the MP makes you KP on the QT. It's just a G.I. Jive, man alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called fluid drive. Hey, Jack, after you revive, chunk all your junk back in your trunk, fall on your bunk, clump. After you revive, chunk all your junk back in your trunk, fall on your bunk, clunk. If you're PFC and you fail to salute the LT, the MP makes you KP on the QT. Then you'll go to sleep before you count to five. But when you wake up in the morning, you'll have to do the G.I. Jive.
On Veterans Day, we went by the Palinville Firehouse for a ceremony where we met Fred Dodd, who used to own the gas station in town, native of Palinville, who went off to World War II about a year into the war.
Name is George F. Dodd.
George F. Dodd?
Dodd. I've always been known as Fred.
Okay.
Up here.
And you're from Capsville?
No, I was from Palinville.
From Palinville?
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to have the gas station up on the corner here. I had that for 3.5 years.
Okay. And, I know it.
Yeah, that was Jim Service Station, was the name of it, right across the schoolhouse.
Okay.
And I went to grade school up here, Bowena Memorial.
And then you served in
World War II.
And so tell me, were you drafted or did you sign up?
Yeah, I was drafted. And I spent 2.5 years over in the CBI, China Burma India Theater, and spent it in the jungle.
Okay. Where did you go first after being drafted?
I went to Fort Belvoir, Virginia.
Okay. And
that's where I had basic training.
How long was basic training?
I think we spent about three months, something like that.
And then you headed right over into the...
And then we went, got on board ship in New York, and we didn't know where we were going. We pulled into Rio de Janeiro for supplies, and there was a German U-boat anchored right next to us.
Really?
That was a neutral port, Rio de Janeiro, a neutral port. And there was a U-boat right next to us. Well, I say next to us, a couple hundred yards away. But we went over there and we fought in Mishinaw. We had the heaviest casualties of any outfit in the CBI.
Wow.
And we were combat engineers. Of course, combat engineers were always up front. We landed in Bombay. We went to Rio de Janeiro, then around Africa, and we were headed 3 days east. We thought we were going to end up in Australia, and all of a sudden we turned north and ended up in Bombay.
Uh-huh.
And we were on the Mariposa, which was one of the Lura Line ships, one of the big luxury cruisers, and we went over on that. When we came back on the Mormac Port, which was a banana boat. You hauled bananas from South America to the United States.
Uh-huh.
That was bad coming back.
But I guess it didn't matter what you were coming back on, as long as you were coming back.
You didn't go below deck anymore, and you had to, because everybody was sick. And
uh-huh.
We had gale winds from the time we hit the Mediterranean to a day out of New York.
Oh, boy. And did you see a lot of action when you were over there?
Well, we were in combat for 3 months. We went in and fought with Merle's Marauders and then took over from them.
Mm-hmm.
And in Mishinaw, Battle of Mishinaw. And then we went back on. See, we built a lot of the Lido Road. That's what we did. We were engineers.
And that was in Burma?
Started in India. Uh-huh. And went into Burma and hooked up with the Burma Road. They call it the Lido Road.
Uh-huh.
It's what connect up to the Burma Road. And we didn't build the Burma Road. We built the Lido Road.
And how was it dealing with the jungle for the first time?
Well, it was, you know, there was nothing you could do except survive. That's all.
Uh-huh. Was there a sense of surface or kind of a great fight at hand, or was it just survival?
What's
getting
that?
Through?
Mishinaw? Yeah. No, we had hot and heavy in Mishinaw.
Well,
I don't think there was any battle in that area part of the war that, you know, was as big as that was at Mishinaw. But there wasn't anything left to the city of Mishinaw. Everything was just bombed out. And I imagine our troops were the ones that bombed it out, you know, before we went in.
Was it a lot of hard stuff you saw over there?
Well, the people over there were just, they carried everything on their heads. The women carried everything on their heads, and be a man up front leading them going through the jungle, and he'd have a sword or a rifle, but the women did all the work.
Uh-huh.
And it was a different world, entirely.
So when you came back, how long were you over there? When did you come back? At the end of the war? Or?
Yeah. I went in, I forget just what date it was, something like the 7th of December, and got discharged about 4 days less than 3 years in service.
Uh-huh.
So I got discharged right in the beginning of December.
And did you come straight home then, or how did you come back?
We end up in New Jersey, Dix, Fort Dix, and spent about 2 nights there or so, and then was discharged and came home.
Were there a lot of people waiting for? How did you come back up here? By bus or train or?
I believe it was by train.
Uh-huh.
It's hard, you know, when I think back, it's hard to remember a lot of things.
Uh-huh. Were there people waiting for you at the station and family?
I don't recall whether there was or not. I don't recall how I got from, you know.
Yeah. Were there other friends, many other people from the community that went over at the same time?
No. My wife's brother-in-law, Wilson Edwards, he and I went in together. But he stayed here in the States for most of the time. He got into training. And then he went to England and trained troops over in England. And I went on to, as I say, to the CBI, China, Burma, India, later.
And had you been working with the gas station beforehand? Was that in your family?
Or? Yeah. No, that wasn't in my family. But I had that gas station for 3.5 years.
And so when you got back, you met your wife and
well, I was engaged to my wife. I was engaged to her throughout the whole time I was in service. She was from Connecticut.
And were you passing letters back and forth?
Oh, yeah.
And so what was your, when you came back, did you continue with service as part of your life?
No. Well, I joined it. We formed a legion here and all, and, you know.
And did you work with the fire department here?
Yeah, I was president of the fire department for several years.
And had you joined the fire department before going?
I was a charter member.
Okay.
Charter member of the fire department, charter member of the American Legion. It started right about, I think, I graduated from high school in 1936, so I was 16 years old, and it was organized maybe a year later, and there was no work at that time, and we built this one building that had enough room for, you know, two stalls in it, and that's all we had, that concrete building. And that's where we hung out, played cards all day, so if there was a fire or something, while we were there, ready to go. But we spent our days in the fire station just to, you know, because we had nothing to do at the time.
And what was it, how did people fight fires before the fire department?
They'd call in other fire departments. Centerville was our savior many
a time.
That's
a long way.
Yeah. And our first fire truck they had for a number of years, and they used to keep it underneath the post office there for a while. The post office was there for the traffic light, and then was down in the basement. And I remember them keeping it in there before we had a fire department organized. And it was a 1924 Rio. It was a chemical truck. Your pressure was all, you had to mix this chemical, and that gave you the pressure, and you just had those small hoses and all. But then we put a pump on it, and that was our first fire truck, that Rio. And
what was the first fire you all fought?
Oh, I can remember up here to Rogies, and Centerville came, and that was before I think we had the old Rio then, but we didn't have a department organized. But Rogies, you probably never heard of it. Rogies was, you come down by Innerman's Inn, come to the foot of the mountain, come across the bridge, round the curve, and up the grade, that grade, and it was on the left-hand side, set up in the side of the hill, side of the mountain there.
We were able to
and
save
I remember, no, it was only partially saved. But anyway, that's one of the first fires that I remember, anyway.
What was the biggest fire you fought?
That's hard to think back and think about that. We used to have a lot of big boarding houses around here and things like that. And most of them, when they disappeared, they burn up.
Yeah.
And I can remember when the Cortiskill Hotel burned, and the whole sky, it was right behind this main mountain here, the Cortiskill Hotel, and it was larger than the mountain house. And when that burned, the whole sky was completely red, you know. You couldn't see the blaze, but the reflection lit the whole sky up during the night.
Did they send, how many departments went up to that?
I have no idea. That was the departments for, I imagine all of those were from on the mountain.
Now, what prompted you to move to Florida?
Well, I went down there to get a divorce. I was having trouble with my first wife, and she went back to Connecticut, and so I went to the lawyer, and Judge Fromer. You ever heard of Fromers in Tannersville?
Yeah.
I went to Judge Fromer and asked him what would be the best thing to do. You couldn't get a divorce in New York State at that time. I mean, that was just about a no-no. And he said the best thing to do is go to Florida and get a divorce. And that's when I finally went to Florida.
Did you stay?
And and I worked for Chevron for 25 and a half years.
Okay. Would you keep coming up here?
Oh yeah, I'd come up here on vacation and like that.
Did you join the fire department down there? Or
yeah.
Service?
Yeah, I was chief down there for a number of years until we hired a man just to be a paid chief.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Reservation Fire Department was the name of the one. It was in back of Lantana, on the Lantana Airport, is where our station was. Yeah.
And so I guess service is just part of life, in your view. Is it something you see in the younger generations coming up? Or?
I don't think that people do it as much as they used to. But I was always busy. I was either working in my yard down here, a beautiful yard, had it, you know, manicured, really. I was either working in my yard or I was over the fire station.
Uh-huh.
One or the other, when I wasn't working, that is.
And you've got kids, any grandkids?
My son, and he's got two children.
And did they all join into fire departments or service?
No, not really.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I've never even thought of that.
The woman. 120.
name's Peter Doty, paramedic with Greenport Rescue, full-time. I've been with Greenport Rescue for about 7 going on 8 years now. I started off when I was 16. My brother was in a fire department, and I'd go on calls with him and watch him, you know, going on calls and helping on the fire and rescue end, and he kind of got me into it. So I blame it on him being an EMS, but then I got on to, I joined Rhinebeck Fire Department. I lived in Rhinebeck, grew up in Rhinebeck, well, Clinton Corners, but went to Rhinebeck School, okay. And joined Rhinebeck Fire Department. I was on Rhinebeck. We were both on Rhinebeck Fire Department together for about 4 years. 4 years as a fire department combined with the rescue squad, their ambulances.
And that was full-time paid? Or
no, that was volunteer.
Okay.
They're still volunteer today. And then I got my CFR, Certified First Responder. That's a very basic level introduction to EMS. Mm-hmm. But it's a state certification. And, you know, enjoyed doing volunteer work. In this case of enjoyed doing it so much, you know, it's one of those things you might as well get paid for it. So went and got my emergency medical technician, basic EMT, another state certification that's higher up, and what's required to be on a New York State certified ambulance. That's your lowest certification you can have. Then I joined or got hired by Hudson Valley Ambulance. That was out of Kingston, and worked there for quite a long time. They were bought out by a couple other companies, Community Medical Transport, and you just kind of stay with them and keep going. And then being a paramedic over there, I was first hired over in Kingston, which where Hudson Valley Ambulance was located, and then Greene County hired Hudson Valley Ambulance, CMT Ambulance, for their ALS. So they had ambulances stationed in Greene County. And then 11 years ago, we're in the 11th year of Greene County paramedics. Hudson Valley Community Medical Transport folded, and they started up their own paramedic service over there, and been with them for 11 years. You worked different squads too, currently employed by Greenport Rescue full-time, Copec Rescue full-time, regular part-time with Greene County Paramedics, and worked per diem with Chatham Rescue.
Now, how does that all add up hours-wise?
A lot. Like this, you know, this time of year, I have 4 kids, you know, so I'm actually today at 7 o'clock tonight, we'll finish the 120 hours straight. You have to. I mean, the pay and the pay's come a long way in how it all started out. When I first got into EMS, there's mostly volunteer squads around. I look at it in a big contributor to a lot of the volunteers folding was when IBM in Kingston closed. There used to be a lot of, you know, firefighters and EMTs and stuff that would run on ambulances and stuff like that. And then kind of a lot when, you know, they folded, you lost a lot of people because they moved. Times changed, you know, where you were allowed to leave work to go on a ambulance call and come back, you know, those days are gone. You know, you can't leave work now to do it. So that's where a lot of the volunteer squads had to go paid. So, you know, I've been with numerous squads, Copec Rescue, that used to be volunteer, then they went paid. Been with them. Southern Columbia Ambulance, they used to be volunteer, went paid. You know, so just kind of you work a lot of squads, because then it was, just above minimum wage to be an EMT, a little bit more to be a paramedic. And even then, there wasn't a lot of paramedics. Greenport was basically the only paramedic service when I started in the area, and they covered almost everything. And then all the other squads, they build up their certification. And, you know, now a lot of the squads are paramedic, but you still have some that are.
How does 120 hours work when you do it straight? Are you just up for 120 hours?
No, you're allowed to sleep. Greenport Rescue, it's a busier station. Mm-hmm. Usually four ambulances on during the day, two at night, covering the biggest, if not one of the biggest, population areas, and having the hospital right in our district, you're doing transports out mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So, the chances of sleeping here are a little bit less than whether, it's Copic Rescue or Chatham Rescue. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much just emergencies. You're not doing transports, and their call volume's not as big as Greenport's is. So you're allowed to sleep. You just hop up and run.
Are you sleeping here, or you're at home, you go home and just on call? Right?
No, all the stations, you sleep at the station. Okay. So you're there for your
so
tour.
So there's a bunk room here?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, there's two bunk rooms here. Everybody has their own bunk room or kind of place to, sleep. You're sleeping on different beds and couches sometimes, uh-huh. and it's not a comfortable, fun lifestyle. But it, pays the bills, and you got, four kids. So when, like this case, when you're doing 120 hours a week, you're literally just going from one squad to the next. Like I started Sunday night in Copake, then came to Greenport for 24, then went to Chatham. Went back to Copake for 24, and then to Greene County Paramedics for 24, and then back here for 12, and then I'll go home tonight.
And then how long will you be home for?
I'll be home for 36 hours.
And then do you get is there vacation worked into all of this?
It depends on the squads. A lot of squads can't offer vacation time mm-hmm. because they just don't have the money to, to be available to do it. Greenport Rescue has, good policy. They got health insurance and vacation time that's put in, retirement options, but not all the squads can do that.
Is it unionized at all, or is it?
No, there are some squads that are, like uh-huh. Catskill Ambulance. They're unionized. Your bigger cities and everything have municipalities, mm-hmm. Fire departments. Whether they're paid, like Hudson here, Hudson Fire Department, Greenport, all the fire departments around here are all strictly volunteer. Mm-hmm. You have no paid fire departments here. But there's people that work for Albany Fire and then, will work here as a paramedic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what did you do before when you were a volunteer back in those years? What was your kind of day job? Or night job?
Well, out of school, I went to graphic communications. I was a printer and got hired right out of school for printing. And I did that for, 5-6 years.
So then, now, how does it work between the volunteer aspects here and the paid aspects?
A lot of all the squads around here, they're still volunteer-based. A lot of them to keep the non-for-profit status, you still have to be volunteer. But then the paid aspect is worked into the business, per se. But you still have your volunteers that, do whatever they can. They run, certain duty nights or on the weekends. They typically all have pagers or radios, and, if they hear a call, they can respond and help out. They do that. A lot of them will, come in and man during the, storms and stuff like that. So they'll, come and stay. And, it's still like a big family, whether you're paid or volunteer.
Is there a retirement program or something that the state runs for volunteers now? I remember there was something that came in as an incentive a few years ago.
With the fire departments, there's a program that you can get breaks on. I think it's the state property tax. Mm-hmm. You get a $300 help out, I don't know what you would call it, deduction for being a volunteer, but there's certain requirements. You got to make so many meetings, so many drills, so many calls per year to get it.
Like in a typical day, what are some of the calls? What sort of calls will you get, say?
It's everything. Just like if you see any of the okay. emergency shows, it can be as horrendous as, you know, watching Emergency or, you know, Third Watch or something like that, where you get the heart attacks, the trouble breathings, the fall down, the traumas, the car accidents. You know, you can have almost anything, anytime. You know, being a little bit more rural up here, you know, it doesn't always get that bad, but they can.
Do you handle the city of Hudson?
Yes. So? You're right. When I first got into EMS and more around Columbia County, being in Columbia County, there used to be a lot of gang activity. I mean, there was, I think, you know, 4 or 5 shootings or homicides in 1 year when I first got here. And then there was a time where the state police, if I have it all right and remember correctly, the state police were kind of allowed into Hudson, and they all kind of, you know, the sheriff's department, the Hudson PD and state just did a huge, you know, crackdown on the gangs and the violence and stuff like that. So, I mean, if you get 1 or 2 shootings a year.
What are the most difficult things you've dealt with in this, you know, over all the years? Not just for Greenport, but just in general.
Just like any EMS personnel, firefighter, mm-hmm. police officer would tell you, kids. Kids are the worst. You know, just having 4 of my own and everything. And the oldest ones are getting out on the road now. It's just the senseless death of kids being in auto accidents.
Yeah.
You know, the senseless people getting hurt because of drinking and driving, you know, over all the years, all the education, all the trying to crack down on the drinking and driving. You know, seeing anybody hurt because, you know, somebody was drinking and driving is just, you know, that gets you a lot. And kids getting hurt and everything, you know, they're just innocent and you hate to see it. But mostly older people and everything, you know, it's usually because of, you know, disease, something like that, mm-hmm. their lifestyle, stuff like that. So you're just more used to it, you know, and you just look at something and say, well, that shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have been that way. You know, they would have never been killed or, you know, permanently disabled because, you know, if somebody just followed the rules or followed the law or paid attention or like they, you know, say nowadays, the texting and everything, driving, you know, you just see it all the time. And, yeah. You just hope for the best, but...
Were you pulled down at 9/11, or were you... Is the entities up here?
Or yeah, there's... They do it big time. It's even going on now with the fire departments. They didn't call ambulances this time for Sandy and the storm. Initially, some ambulances went down and helped out. But for 9/11, yeah, for weeks, mm-hmm. you know, the volunteers... You know, would come in, man ambulances, and go down and do calls down there or just station down there. Yeah, for there's an ice storm up north, sent ambulances up there to help them out.
Yeah. What overall, besides being able to support a family with 4 kids and all of that, what do you pull from the work? And what are most kind of others pull from it? Is there like a something deeper?
Well, every career, you know, you're in it usually because you love it or you enjoy it to some degree. You know, the firefighters, you wouldn't be a volunteer firefighter or EMS or something like that if you didn't have a true caring, you know, and love for people and helping people and stuff like that. It goes the same for even being paid. You know, you wouldn't be doing this job, you know, if you didn't, you know, care and want to help, you know. Just like they all say, being a police officer, you know, it's a special breed, a firefighter, it's a, you know, special breed of person, and same with EMS. It's a, you know, deep down caring of, you know, people and helping and want to help. And, you know, so just, you know, working a lot of hours and helping everybody, you know, just pull out at the end of each call that you help them from, you know, what the bad situation that they picked up the phone and called 911 to get you there, and then to get them to the hospital, you know, in a better condition. You just pull the good out of each one that you can.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand, men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest, make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
At the November Veterans Day observances at the Palenville Fire Department, we talked with Bill Thorpe of Haines Falls and Dana Hummel of Elka Park about their time serving our nation during the Vietnam War, as well as their subsequent years with local fire departments.
Well, I was in the Army for 4 years. I did tours in Thailand, Japan, and Alaska. I had a top secret security clearance. Some of it can't talk about, some of it can. From 1965 to 69. I was never in Vietnam. I volunteered. I would have had to go anyway. This is before the volunteer army.
Uh-huh. I enlisted in 1968. It was in January. And I volunteered for 2 tours of Vietnam. I was with the United States Navy Seabees, which is a construction outfit. And we were over in Vietnam, we built bridges and airstrips, and I was with Mobile Construction Battalion 10. MCB 10 was the first CB outfit that did amphibious landing in Vietnam with the Marine Corps. Uh-huh. Normally the Seabees support the Marines. When I was with him, we were with the 101st Screaming Eagles up in Camp Evans, up in the I Corps. And then we built like what they call hospitals for the helicopters. And once we got them built, they moved the 101st Screaming Eagles out, and they brought the first air cab in. It was a very interesting time.
And how old were each of you when you signed up?
I was 19 when I went in.
And I think I was 19.
And had you been working beforehand or just out of high school? Were you Hunter Tannersville?
Hunter Tannersville.
Yeah, I graduated from Hunter Tannersville Central High School in 1966. Uh-huh. I had a background in construction, and that's how when I enlisted, they took me in. We made a deal. Uh-huh. When I got out of boot camp, they made me an E4, which is a petty officer third class. But the stipulation was I served two tours in Vietnam. They don't give you something without getting something back.
Yeah.
So at the time, I really didn't want to go in the Army. My father was in World War II. He was on the battleship USS Tennessee.
Okay.
And I said to my dad, I think I'd be better off in the Navy. He agreed, but he said, you have any idea what you're getting into? And I said, Dad, you were in a war. I feel it's my duty to do the same thing. Did I really know what I was getting into? I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
And when they landed us in Da Nang, and we didn't have any rifles, we didn't have any flak jackets or
where
helmets.
Did you stay yourself then?
And then I was getting a little nervous. And then they put us on a C-130 and they flew us up north. And we landed in the Camp Evans, they were shooting at us. And then I realized, this is not going to be good. Yeah. And just the smell of the whole country, all of a sudden.
Well, I was in Thailand for close to 6 months, TDY. And just similar to Vietnam, there's areas of combat there. But not where I was. I was out in the middle of boondocks. About 10 miles from Udorn Air Force Base. And, I had easy, more or less. It was a nice air-conditioned building. And there's guard towers all around. With Thai security guards. What I was doing, well, I was an eavesdropper, let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
And, that's about it. I was out in the Aleutian Islands for a year as part of that ballistic early warning system for missiles. But I was in the Army, the Air Force Station. It was an Air Force Station. It's called Shimia. I flew missions out of there from, well, I really can't say, or I shouldn't say.
When did you each return, and did you come right back to Tannersville? Or?
I knew guys were afraid to come back home. And kind of the demonstrations that was going on in Detroit and Los Angeles, around there.
Because you came back, what, 69?
69.
Yeah, that was
May of 69. When I got off the plane in San Francisco, I had demonstrators there. You know, grab a hold of you. Say, what are you doing? You know, I was in uniform. And you know, they didn't call me a baby killer, but you know, same with there. What you're doing in service? What you're fighting this war? That's about it.
And then you came back. From there, you came
right straight back home.
And what did you do once you got home? Was there work waiting? Or?
I took it easy for about 2 months. I think I got a job in Twilight Park in Haines Falls. I was there for 12 years. Then I went to work in the Village of Hunter for 21.
Well, I was stationed in Port Hueneme, California. And when we went to Vietnam, they flew us over with a civilian airliner, which landed in Da Nang. Mm-hmm. So we did the same thing when it come time to come home. The whole battalion deploys and comes back at the same time. So there's like 1,200 men in the construction battalion. We have our own security. We defend our own base and all that. So when we come back, we went down to Da Nang. We got on a civilian airline. They flew us back. I think it was Andrews Air Force Base in California.
Mm-hmm.
And
Travis.
Which one was it?
Travis. Travis Air Force Base.
Well, I think it was Anderson. Or one of the Anderson. Where did they land a shell out there to California?
That was Travis. Well, just outside, that's outside of San Francisco.
40-some years ago.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
anyway, we signed our leave paper, so I took a 28-day leave because I had enough time on the books. But I didn't have my dress blues. So we wore the Marine Corps fatigues. We wore the Marine Corps fatigues and the hats. We had U.S. Navy CB in our name, and then we had a CB emblem. But that's what I had on when we come home.
Mm-hmm.
So when I signed my leave papers, I said, I don't have my dress blues and that to go home. Then they said, you can go home in your fatigues. But when I got on a civilian airliner, nobody's sitting there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if it was because...
What year was that? Like 79?
69.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was because of the protests against the soldiers, or it was because we stunk so bad.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I was used to the smell, but I had my seat bag with me when I got back home to Haines Falls, and I put that seat bag in the house. My mother says, get that thing out of here. And I'm like, what's the matter? She says, it smells like a garbage dump.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty rank.
So what did you end up doing once you moved back?
Well, unfortunately, after my leave was over, I had to go back to California. And I was going to do another tour of Vietnam. And they said to me, well, first they said, we'll give you E5, which will make you a sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, and you do another tour of Nam? And I says, no. And I said, I know I don't have enough time. You might send me back for a little while, but you're not going to send me for a whole tour unless they extend you.
Uh-huh.
And they were cutting back at that point. So they said, end October, you can go home. And I bought a 1969 FLH Harley Davidson Electric Glide.
Uh-huh.
And I rode it home from California in late October. I went 800 miles the first day. I made it home in 5 days. I went up to Albany and reported in. There was Lieutenant J.G. up there, and he didn't like my hair, and he didn't like my shoes. And Navy chief come out, and he says, you just come back from Vietnam, didn't you? And I says, yes, sir. And he says, you know you don't, sir, a chief. I says, yes, sir. And he says, you don't have to listen to that, Lieutenant. He says, go on home. And I went home. And I think legally I was probably supposed to give them some reserve time.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't. And they never come and got me. And I figured if they did, what are they going to do? Send me back to Nam? I wasn't too worried about it at that point.
And so what sort of work did you take up?
Well, for the first year, I just kind of wanted to be quiet downtime.
Mm-hmm.
So my uncle was the superintendent of Twilight Park. So I went over there and we mowed lawns and raked leaves and carried wood and worked on the tennis courts. And it didn't pay a lot, but it was enough to give me my beer money and cigarettes. And,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of nice. And then I kind of got back into construction. And then I ended up, I went to work for the state. Well, what happened in the wintertime, I got laid off. So I went to the unemployment office, and the woman says, you got to do an interview at Coxsackie Correctional Facility. They're looking for an equipment operator. So I said, I'm not working in a prison. And she said, then you're not getting a check. So I said, I'll go do the interview. And I went up there, and the guy asked me how I learned what I knew. And I said, I was in the Seabees. He says, what battalion? I said, MCB 10. He says, well, I'm a retired chief from MCB 10. You start work Monday morning. I said, I don't want this job. It don't pay enough. He says, don't be foolish. He says, with the benefits and that, he says, and with your knowledge, you just keep doing what you're doing. And he says, you'll get promotions. So after 32 years, I retired with the Department of Correction. I was a heavy equipment operator for a couple years. Then I became a carpenter. Then I became a maintenance supervisor, grade 17. And then I became a maintenance supervisor, 19. So I did fine.
So you guys have known each other for a few years.
All our lives.
Uh-huh.
Well, more or less grew up together.
Yeah.
And did you all, in terms of other service, were involved with fire departments or anything else up on the mountaintop?
I was in the Haines Falls Fire Department for very close to 25 years, and I got out like exempt fireman. And I didn't really lose interest, I just gave it up.
I'm a past chief of Haines Falls Fire Company. I'm still a member. Okay. I'm not an active member because, well, I have a thyroid problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that took place like in 95, and then they come out with Class A firemen and that, where you got to wear Scott Air Packs and all that. So I really stopped being super active. I still support the fire company. I belonged to the American Legion for 43 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the biggest fire you guys worked on up there?
Maybe the sweater store in Tannersville on the corner?
Well, that was years and years ago.
And then we had you remember the old Klondike?
Oh, yeah. Remember. Okay.
Yeah, that was in Tannersville. We've had a lot of fires on the mountaintop. And we've had some big fires. La Cascade in Haines Falls.
Bill Maria.
Sunset. The annex, I guess they call it, where the swimming pool was.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We had a bad fire on North Lake Road. That was a hotel. I mean, unfortunately, there for a while. I am the commander of the Bundle American Legion Post 165 in Tannersville. If you're eligible to belong to the American Legion, we're always looking for young or old.
Uh-huh.
We're looking for some guys, and if you don't want to really be active, that's okay. We're still looking for people. It's all about numbers.
Are you getting a number of people from the more recent?
We're getting a few.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when somebody comes out of a war zone, a lot of times they don't want to join a military organization or of any kind. It seems like they just kind of wind down, and I was the same way.
Uh-huh.
Then I think as you become a little bit older, you realize what it's all about, and that numbers do count, and you got to support your fellow veterans. I mean, a lot of people think that I'm also the commander of the VFW in Tannersville. That's post 23-22.
Mm-hmm.
And they think your American Legion and your VFWs have a bar, and you all sit around, smoke cigars, and drink beer, and tell war stories. And that's not what it's about. Most of us never even mention what we did in the service, to each other even. I mean, that's past. I mean, and a lot of it hurts. So you don't want to talk about it? But I think a lot of the new soldiers, they figure that's what we're doing, and of course they don't want to talk about it either. And what they got to realize, we've all gone through this, and it's not easy to readjust to civilian life after you've been in combat. I mean, I'll tell you right here on the radio, I got PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize I had it until I was helping in the flood down there in Lexington. And that was in 2011, September 16th. And I ended up in the hospital for a day. I've had episodes before that. And I went to Michelle Black, who is the Veterans Service Agency in Catskill. A buddy of mine who was in Vietnam in the Air Force, he drove me down there. She took one look at me, called an ambulance, wanted to take me up to the VA. Well, New York state law says you go to the nearest hospital. So they took me back to Hudson.
Uh-huh.
I was in Hudson in 2003 when I retired, and they put me up on the fifth floor, and I was there for 10 days, not by my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I worked 30-some years in the Department of Correction, and they treated me worse in there than if I was an inmate, and I told them that.
Wow.
And when they had the flood in Lexington, I was flagging for them, helping them cook. And then we started cleaning the houses and that out. And I was helping the veterans down there. There was two Korean vets. Their houses were flooded, 5 foot of mud and crap in it.
Mm-hmm.
We had some more American Legion members. We went down, started cleaning the stuff out. One of the guys cut his finger bad, one of the Korean vets. There was helicopters flying around. And the next thing, I was kind of back in combat mode. They took me over to the hospital, kept me there from 10 o'clock in the morning to 8:30 at night. And my potassium levels went a little out of whack, and then they just turned me loose. And I'm like, how do I get home? Nothing to eat. They didn't even feed me.
Wow.
But then Michelle Black hooked me up with a psychologist in Kingston, and I go to him every 14 days. And so far, he's keeping me on the ground, and things are working. But Vietnam's bothered me from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's guilt, because I made it home and a lot of guys didn't. Mm-hmm. But you just got this hollow, empty feeling inside you. And I've got it right now, just by talking about it.
Yeah.
And, but I think any veteran that's been in a war zone goes through that.
And that's, I guess, where one of the benefits of the Legion of VFW is that there are people around who can recognize.
Right. The camaraderie. You know that most of these guys have been there, done that, the same as you have. And it gives you the strength to keep doing what you got to do.
November issue of The Work Show, all about service and servicemen and women. Music this edition was by Louis Jordan doing the GI Blues, Flaming Lips doing Mr. Ambulance Driver, The Ballad of the Green Berets by Sergeant Barry Sandler, and the McGarrigles, the wonderful McGarrigles, doing Was My Brother in the Battle. My name's Paul Smart, and until next month, keep on working.
Island host were so wrongfully outnumbered on the Carolina coast. Did he struggle for the Union mid the thunder and the rain till he fell among the brave on a bleak Virginia plain? Oh, I'm sure that he was dauntless and his courage never lied by contending for the honor of a dear and cherished flight. Tell me, weary soldier, will he never come again? Did he suffer with the wounded or die among the slain? Protection of our fame. One fleet from off the water, born of terror and dismay, till the bold and weary foe fell like leaves on autumn day. When the bugle called to battle and the cannon deeply roared, all I wish I could have seen him draw his sharp